Alright, so I think we could start Parak Beis Pasuk Yutes. The Pasuk says, Uvikavetz Basula Shenis. They gather together the unmarried women a second time. That's strange. Esther was chosen already. They gathered them together a second time. Umordechai Yeshiv B'Shahar Malach. And Mordechai is sitting in the gates of the king. I don't know. So, you know, there's two questions which we want to understand, two questions we want to resolve in this pasuk. Why is Achashverosh gathering the Basulas a second time? When it's very clear that Esther was, she was Matzah Chayin B'Chesed B'Einav. And what does it have to do with Mordechai sitting B'Shar Melech? What did the other girls being gathered again have to do with Mordechai sitting there?
Aren't they no longer Basulas?
He didn't see all the women because he saw Esther somewhere in the middle. So we're talking about the ones that he didn't see yet. He gathered them again. I saw an interesting shot from the Megillah Sturm. He goes to Shitasai. We explained from Megillah Sturm that a Kadosh Baruch Hu made a nes, and he cast upon Esther this ruach, this air of which he calls Chayin of Chesed. The Achashverosh loved her because of her qualities, not because of the tashmish. He loved her because of her ethereal qualities. He's very unique in this regard. But he's consistent, because in this pasuk, as a result of that, Achashverosh, there was a need in Achashverosh that wasn't getting filled. He was a Baltaiva. He was a Persian, a Mahadran. A Baltaiva among Balitaiva. And he has the most beautiful queen in the world. And what appeals to him about her are her midas, her cheretz, the way she carries herself. Her refinement. And he has a tiber. So what does he do with his tiber? And it's the abkus of the nesh you see from this pasuk. That he couldn't bring himself to think of Esther in those terms. He's going to use Esther for his tiber? She's like a porcelain doll. She's on a pedestal. He's going to use Esther for his tiber? No way! He can't. He can't think. He can't have that kind of relationship with her. It's a nes. It's one of the big nesim. So he gathered, the Megillah Sturm says that he gathered together the Basulah Shenis because for his tiber he needed another wife. He couldn't be Mamali. He couldn't fulfill. He couldn't satisfy his physical tivus through Esther. He couldn't do it.
He had already gotten let's say a couple of hundred new concubines before he got to Esther, on the day when they...
Yeah, well, all that tells you is it tells you a thing or two about Taiva.
True that.
He picks his wife, he can't hesitate with her, he's got to have more. Taiva knows no limits. And that's the biggest pella, because there isn't a limit imposed, not Esther. But everyone else, when he can't get his tiber from her, he has to gather them all together and get new tiber, more tiber. That's according to Megillah Sturm. And I said he's a yochid, it's unique.
So what does he do with the Gemara with that mentions that the Achashverosh should live with her?
There's something about Mefarshim on Tanakh.
But this is going
to... Yeah, that they, there's one thing we have to understand about interpretations of Sukkim. Hashem gave us, Chazal say he gave us four levels that we could understand them on. And the four levels have sub-levels, and the sub-levels have sub-sub-levels. And they're called Pshat, Remesh, Drush, and Sod. Pardes. Pei, Resh, Dal, Sof. Pshat, Remesh, Drush, and Sod. And Gemaras are in the part called Drush. And pshat doesn't, you know, pshat doesn't, isn't meshubit. Pshat is not subservient to drush. And the mefarshim on Tanakh, there are those mefarshim that they gear their commentaries to coincide with the words of the Gemara, that the commentaries are more drushdik. And there are those commentaries that, you know, they have a totally different understanding based on the way they understand the pasuk. And it's not to the exclusion of the other pshatim. The Gemara says, "Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim." All the pshatim, all true pshatim, are equally true. But you will find among the mefarshim, they'll say things that the Gemara doesn't say. On some level, you can reconcile all the pshatim. We don't always have access to that understanding. Now, how do you reconcile a pshat that says she didn't have tashmish and a pshat that says she did have tashmish? I mean, this is not just a local problem. This is a global problem. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim is a challenging concept. How do you reconcile all the things together? And we don't always have the ability to do that. You have to be great. In any case, that's how he learns. He learns that he didn't have tashmish with her. Or at least he was mimayat the tashmish. It was minimized. That's not what she was there for. And the Von Lagrein says the opposite to pshat. The opposite of the Megillah Starm. So they were not gathered. The basulas were not gathered to be brought in front of Achashverosh for his taiva. They were gathered to be sent home. The law was any woman that had relations with Achashverosh had to stay as a prisoner in his harem for the rest of her life. But there were those that their turn came after Esther, so they didn't have her. They never had relations with Achashverosh.
They got lucky.
They were sent home. Yeah, well, in reality, they got lucky, yes. I don't know if they looked at it that way. They were sent home. They were sent home.
It seems like they gathered them a second time.
They gathered them together. He made a whole thing of it. The Vilna Gaon says he made a whole thing of it. It wasn't like, okay, everyone go home now. They made a gathering to send them home. Why? Because that's a public display of covet for Esther. They had 3,492 girls. He saw 1,423 of them, and then Esther is the 1,424th. So he's got another 1,500 girls to see. More. I'm not seeing them. It's it. Everyone get together. They all get together. They have no idea why. They weren't brought in front of Achashverosh. And then they say, yeah, you can all go home. Esther's the one. His intent in doing so was to show cover to Esther. Why was he interested in showing cover to Esther? He wanted desperately to know where she was from. So he tried exempting her nation from the taxes, and he didn't know who to exempt. He made a party, which we said was a party made up of the elements of high society. That didn't work. So now he's trying to show her in a gesture. He's mechabeder. He's publicly making a public statement that there's no one, whether seen or unseen, even the ones he didn't see, they don't come to her. And that's it. That's a public declaration of covet to her. And maybe she'll tell him. The Gemara Megillah has another pshat, a third pshat. The Gemara Megillah has a third pshat. The Gemara Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. He knew it was Esther. He had no intention of seeing the other women to see if they had potential of being his queen. He had made up his mind. But he went through the motions anyway. This is a third shot. He went through the motions anyway. And he gathered them together as a charade. He wanted Esther to think that her position wasn't so secure. She wouldn't tell him where she's from. You're not going to tell him where you're from, so you could be replaced. Let's go see some other ones. So he gathered them together to make her jealous. So the three pshatim are either gathered them together for purposes of his taiva, self-serving interests. Another pshat, they gathered them together to show honor to Esther because he's sending them home. And the Gemara's pshat is to get them together that Esther should be fearful of being replaced even before she starts her career.
He didn't know that that would actually
make her very happy. Yes, yeah. It make her very, very happy.
Isn't this like the pshat that said that Ahasuerus is doing everything he can to make Esther feel unwanted and uncomfortable so that she wouldn't rise up against him?
No, but she bypassed all of that.
No, but it says
the advice of the young lads was to make her feel under the power of the officers. Uncomfortable is not enough. Uncomfortable is not a part of that. Uncomfortable? They were very comfortable. It was just that they should feel that they shouldn't feel the prestige. They shouldn't feel the prestige. You're right. According to one of these pshatim, he's definitely canceling out that impression because he's building up her prestige. According to one of the pshatim that he said, he's trying to be mechabed her. He's building up her prestige. But that's the way he is. He has an agenda. He wants her to tell him. You're right, there's a little bit of cross purposes going on here. And when he was advised to knock down her prestige on the other, and he's building her up. That's okay. No one says Ahasuerus has to be consistent. He's not, he's not obligated to be consistent. So according to the Gemara, so now you can understand why the pasuk continues with the Mordechai Yosha B'Shar HaMelech. When they gather together the Besulais a second time, so it's integral to mention the Mordechai Yosha B'Shar HaMelech. Esther should not reveal her origins. There's tremendous forces being placed. There are tremendous forces at play. They're being brought to bear on Esther to reveal her origins. The Nais requires her to keep silent on this matter. She can't say.
Why?
Because the timing is all important. She reveals it after Haman hatches his plan to destroy the Jewish people. When Ahasuerus is at the epitome of his anger at Haman, when he's on the verge of killing him, and he's just like a thin onion skin, a layer, a thin membrane, is holding him back. So then she says, you know what this guy did? He tried to kill all my people. I'm Jewish. That caused Ahasuerus to boil over. He reached critical mass. If he would know all along she's Jewish, who knows, he would keep her. If he would keep her, he would lose the element of surprise. She can't tell. It's critical. So that's why it says, Mordechai, all these things are being brought upon her to reveal it to Mordechai Yosha B'Shar HaMelech. I saw a pshat from the Reb Shlomo Alkabitz. He wrote a commentary called the Menos HaLevi. Reb Shlomo Alkabitz, we know him as the Mechaber of the song L'Chadaydi, lived in Sfas. And he has a kasha which every single one of us has asked at one time or another. In Hebrew and English. Aleph Lamed Kuf Beis Tzadok Sofis. Now, there seem to have been ample opportunity to unearth her origins. Just people, we saw that there was a search, and she had for 3 years. Ahasuerus sent them out again because he heard that there's some girls that they missed, and whoever doesn't bring her back is going to be Chayv Misa. They seem to have known that there were people that knew what they were looking for. If you have the resources of a kingdom, if those are harnessed towards finding out the origins, the lineage of someone, it seems very strange that they would have no success at finding out who she is.
Well, maybe it's just that he wanted to hear it from. Maybe he wanted her to tell him. Wasn't that he wanted necessarily just to know where she was from, but he wanted her to tell him where she was from.
That sounds like a very nice pshat. I mean, there's evidence to back that up. He keeps asking her. You don't.
Yeah.
That sounds like a very nice pshat. But I could integrate your pshat into the pshat of Shlomo Alkabitz as well. He says, it's just very strange that nobody found out and they couldn't find out. He said, the teretz is, the pasuk says, Esther was nice as chen be'ini kol re'aha. Everybody loved Esther. Reb Shlomo Alkabitz says that the reason why it was so hard for him, so difficult for him, to find out where she truly was from,
nobody would tell him,
is because everybody was taking credit for her. All 127 provinces were all saying that she was from them. There was so much confusion. Yes, there was evidence that she was raised by Mordecai and she was a Jewish child. There was evidence that it existed. But there was also evidence that she was an Indian princess. And there was also an evidence that she was from Zimbabwe. You know, the truth got lost in the shuffle. And that's why he had to get it from her, because she is the only one
that really knows.
This pshat solves one of the great mysteries of Megillas Esther. How could you not know? He didn't believe anybody. The only one who's going to believe is Esther. Basakov. And Esther Margetis Malatata, she wouldn't relate where she was born, Vesama, and her nation. Kashetzi Vala Mordechai. As Mordechai commanded her, Vesmama Mordechai Esther Oisa, she fulfilled the instructions of Mordechai, the word of Mordechai. Kashetzi Ba'ami Itai. Just as she did when she was raised with him. Now this is amazing. Even on the surface this is amazing. She's the queen in the palace. And not only did she follow the word, the dictates of Mordechai, but she followed the dictates of Mordechai in the same manner as she did when she was in his household. There's got to be an Amkus here somewhere. It's almost amazing. Rashi says, she didn't say because Mordechai kept reminding her. He said he was meramez her. He kept on hinting to her. There had to have been a form of a subtle communication between them.
Who says this?
Rashi.
Oh.
He was meramez her. And that's a hemshek of the previous pasuk. Mordechai is Yeshua B'Sha'ar Melech.
It makes sense.
It seems to me, you see the importance of this. The Mordechai is dedicating his life. He's placing his station there for the sole purpose of making sure she doesn't say where she's from.
It makes sense that he had access to her. He was one of the servants in the king's palace.
Yeah, he was high up there.
Yeah.
On this pasuk, the Targum shed some light on what the pasuk was referring to. The Targum says that it was at that time. Mordechai was sitting by the gates of the king. I mean, I'll start from the Targum from the previous pasuk. What was he doing by the gates of the king? He was davening. Mordechai sat by the gates of the king and he was davening. What was he davening for? He was davening because he saw something's going on. He saw Klal Yisrael was in trouble. He saw everything.
Why by the gates of the king?
That's where the nation's going to come. So he was davening. It says Mordechai was, when the Basulos were gathered again, Mordechai was davening and sitting by the gates of the king. Now what he was davening for, you could say he was davening that Esther shouldn't get replaced, because he saw her being taken to the king as part of the Hatzalah. But it doesn't say in the Targum what he was davening for. He was davening. At that time, the king asks Esther, where are you from? And she wouldn't say, because Mordechai told her, and she kept Mordechai's instructions. What is meant by the words, as Mama Mordechai Esther Isa, that she kept the words of Mordechai? She kept Shabbos. She kept Yom Tov. She kept Hilchos Nida. In the palace of the king?
How'd you get to a mikvah?
Exactly. You're asking what's a chiddush. Yeah, I don't understand what's a
chiddush. That's really hard.
Kip Shabbos, Yom Tov, Anida?
Bishal Akum?
2 weeks.
Bishal Akum? That means that she didn't eat anything that was cooked by a guy?
No, he said she only eat beans.
That was before, when she was in the Beis HaNashim. I mean, the Targum is talking about what she did in the palace of the king. Bishalakim, Yayin Nesach, no wine. How did she get away with it?
That party with Hashverosh was...
The first party that she, with the one she, who said she ate or drank anything? I mean, there's answers. There's ways of getting around it. She did have her seven maidens that were there from girls. Who knows? You know, they could have gotten her some Jewish wine, or maybe she didn't drink. You know, there's different ways. But the Maaser, it says she didn't taste.
Achashverosh did have it though at the Mishnah.
You're right, so Achashverosh had a storehouse full of kosher wine. Yeah, he had Kedem wine with double seals, the Mashkiach. And she said all the mitzvahs of women. You know, the mitzvahs are chayiv and all mitzvahs except for mitzvahs seishas man grooming. All the women mitzvahs she kept. Because the Mordechai taught her how to do that when she grew up with him. I mean, it's just an amazing pasuk. Let's go on to pasuk of Aleph. Bayam Mehem. In those days, Mordechai, yeah, pasuk of Aleph. Bayam Mehem. In those days, Mordechai Yeshev B'Shar Melech. Mordechai sitting in the gate of the king. Katzav Bigson v'Seresh. They were angered. Who was angered? Bigson and Seresh were angered. Shnei Sarisi HaMelech, the 2 foot soldiers of the king. Mishem Yasaf, they guarded the threshold. That's a pretty important job. They guard who has access to the king. You know, they had the control of who has access to the king. Vayivakshu v'shloyach yad b'melech Achashverosh. They wanted to send their hands against Achashverosh, which means to assassinate.
What was their job?
They guarded the threshold. They controlled the access to the palace. The Akhmam lays on this pasuk explains why was Mordechai sitting Bishar HaMelech? No, it says it twice. It says in pasuk Yitas, Mordechai was Yeshev Bishar HaMelech. So the Mefarshim say that he was sitting there to make sure that Esther wouldn't reveal her origins, or like we saw in the Targum, to daven for, you know, pashtus, he was davening so that Esther should be matzliach and save Klal Yisrael. But in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, it says it again. It says, Bayam Mehem, in those days, Mordechai Yeshev B'Shar HaMelech. Why does it say it again? Yaakov Yamloi said because Mordechai, you know, he shifts the attention away from Esther onto Klal Yisrael. If HaKadosh Baruch, you know, HaKadosh Baruch is Makdim Refua L'Makkah. Hashem prepares the Refua, the healing process, before the ailment. Mordechai sees the Esther is being taken to the king. He sees that Abbas Yisrael is being in place. That's a tremendous, tremendous Makkah, a source of Hatzalah for Klal Yisrael. That means there's going to be a big tzara coming. It's like the tremors before an earthquake. You know, you want to see if a storm is coming. You look at the birds racing around the sky like Meshuggayim, you know. But Kadosh Baruch Hu takes Esther and he puts her in the palace of the king as a potential hatzalah for Klal Yisrael, and the Klal Yisrael is in very big sakana. And the sakana most probably will originate from the Shar HaMelech. So he sat there to see how the sakana was going to develop. That's what the Yalkut Me'amloya says. The Targum, and this pasuk also illuminates matters. Yeshev B'Shar HaMelech does not mean the gates of the king. Literally, the gates of the king. In Chazal, Ashar, the gates, always means a Bezdin. We see this in Sefer Rus. Sefer Rus. Mm-hmm. Bayez brought plenty of money to Din Torah, to the Zakein and Bashar.
Also
by Yibum, but also Yivim to Hashaira.
Also by Lot, he was also in...
By Lot.
In Sodom, he was in the Hashaira.
He was in the Shar. The Shars were the best and convened. The Targum tells us that Mordechai, when it says Mordechai was Yeshev B'Shar HaMelech, it doesn't mean the gates of the king. In Pasuk Yotes, that was referring to the gates of the king. In Pasuk of Aleph, it's not referring to the gates of the king. Or not exactly. The Targum himself, he explains Shaar HaMelech two different ways in two different psukim. It was on the day of Mordechai sitting in the Sanhedrin. There was a Sanhedrin instituted by Esther. Esther became a queen. It's amazing. Her first act of queen.
How did she get away with that without...
Unbelievable. I don't know. Her first act of queen. Well, you know what? I thought about it a little bit. Who was the first person Achashverosh asked when he wanted to know what to do with Vashti?
His advisors.
No. Bnei Yisachar. So Achashverosh knew which side of the bread which side of the bread was buttered. Yeah. I don't know. You know, even so, I think it's amazing. I think it is amazing that she did it and that it didn't arouse suspicions. He still doesn't know where she's from. But if you're looking for a mahalach, looking for some way of explaining it, Achashverosh himself went to the Jews. Nebuchadnezzar, the highest person in his realm, was Daniel. The Hanani, Mishael, Vazayah, they all had the palace Jews. I don't know if it's as suspicious as it sounds. She made a Sanhedrin, and they sat there. Where did they sit? Right by the gates of the king. And Mordechai was convening the Sanhedrin. So in Pasuk Yotes, Mordechai is sitting in the gates of the king. In Pasuk Chaval of Mordechai is sitting in the Sanhedrin. Shaar HaMelech is the gates of HaMelech. Who's HaMelech? God. Bixen and Sarish, he gives us an insight to something. Bixen and Sarish, they're guarding all this, and they see there's a whole bunch of Jews there watching over them, you know? They're doing something over there. There's like this whole convocation there by the Shaar HaMelech, right on their watch. So when Bixen and Sarish saw this, they saw this whole gathering, they got angry. And they said one to the other that the queen and the king are plotting to get rid of us.
They're from some weird country.
They were Tarsian. From Tars. And they want to replace us. The king and the queen are in cahoots. To get rid of us. And replace us. And to put Mordechai in place of us.
That kind of seems like a totally ridiculous solution for the problem. If they kill the king, then what are they guarding? They're going to not be necessary.
The next king will be their flunky. It's called palace intrigue.
They didn't want to lose their jobs, so they were going to kill their boss. They won't lose their
jobs. I think when you're replaced, it's sort of permanent. That's not like being fired. Sorry.
No, but they were just like the guards. They couldn't just say, all right, we don't need you guys anymore. It would have to be, oh, you guys are sentenced to death. Why? We don't need you anymore.
It works like this. You can't replace someone that's the palace guard. It's a lifetime appointment. The only way to get rid of him is to kill him. You have to trump up some charges against him to get rid of him. You can't fire someone that, you know, there's rights. There's inalienable rights to these things. You want to get rid of a king, you have to kill him. Royalty cannot be fired. The whole machine, you know, the way... Listen, there's ample history to back up what I'm saying now. That the way that people advanced their careers was to kill each other off. They didn't just fire them. We never grew up in this system. We don't comprehend the way it works. So they started talking to each other. And they guarded it. And they hatched this plot. I don't exactly understand the plot 100%. Maybe you could help. They said we're gonna poison Esther. We're gonna poison Esther. It says poison. And then we're gonna kill Achashverosh with the sword. So this adds to the reasons that they wanted to kill Achashverosh and Esther. Because Esther was in on the plot. Yeah, why not poison both of them? Why not kill both of them with the sword? I was thinking that maybe that the way to kill a king is with a sword. That is the way to kill a king.
Yeah, if they kill the king in a
sword fight, then they're going to be killed anyway.
Not with a sword fight. They'll kill them with a sword.
And no one else is going to see. I mean,
they didn't let me in on the way they planned on doing this.
It actually kind of implies that, like, they weren't the only people who felt this way about it. Like,
the king is always a target. Yeah. Everybody wants to kill the king. He's cruel. The king uses everyone. The king is always in danger.
So many parties for them.
You know?
Weird. I think I'm gonna kill you.
They're poisoned.
Is that something else that I could explain to make it clearer? I mean, this is like, they saw the convening of the Sanhedrin, and the Shaar Beis HaMelech as a direct threat to them, and their assassination attempt was to prevent, it was to preempt the strike against them. So it helps us understand a lot. It also shows the Hashkacha Pratis, the divine intervention. Esther didn't. This was the furthest thing from Esther's mind. She didn't care less about these two officers. They could have stayed there. She wanted a Sanhedrin there. You have a Malchus. David HaMelech ruled with the Sanhedrin. Every day his decisions was made with the Sanhedrin to go to war or not to go to war, to feed the people. Well, you learned the Gemara in Brachas. David HaMelech was hand in hand with the Sanhedrin. Esther's Malchus is hand in hand with the Sanhedrin. It's a Tayridic Malchus. And like we said, Achashverosh was not a Melech. Esther was the Melech. The king of Persia was Esther. And it was a Tayridic Malchus. And she was a Shliach of Kadosh Baruch to be the Malcha. So that needs a Sanhedrin. And because of that, Biggs and the Sheriff felt threatened. And they were mistaken. They launched an unsuccessful attempt of assassination against the king. Mordechai finds out about it. And the whole nation, evolves from that. Haman tries to kill Mordechai. Mordechai is the one that saved the king. Weiter gegangen, right? So you see, there's nothing. Everything is random, and nothing is random, all at the same time. Pasuk of Beis. There's no question. Go find something. Go. Right. Vayivada davel Mordechai. It was known, this plot, this thing, to Mordechai. Vayagid last to the Malka. And he told it over to Esther the queen. Vatimer Esther. Mamela, and Esther told it over to the king, B'shem Mordechai, in the name of Mordechai. So there's three things. Someone told it to Mordechai, Mordechai told it to Esther, Esther told it to the king. How did Mordechai find out about it?
He was right there.
The Targum tells us, Targum, the Gemara, the Mefarshim, Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin. In order to be a member of the Sanhedrin, he had to know 70 languages. I mean, we just went through Parshas Miketz, Yigash, Veichi, you see that Yosef HaTzadik knew all the languages. I mean, even Paro, he knew the languages. The only one he didn't know was Lashon Kodesh. A ruler has to rule. And in order to rule, you have to understand what you're ruling. And in order to understand, you have to speak their language. The Sanhedrin had to understand everything, so they had to understand the totality of all human communication.
Be a lot harder nowadays.
Okay, and it's more understanding the thought process, the culture, than the actual words.
Yeah.
It's much deeper than just the actual words. And Mordechai understood from Bixen and Sarash from Taras, and the Taras, they spoke some kind of obscure dialect that nobody understood. So they were plotting with each other, and they didn't take measures to prevent eavesdroppers because no one understands what they're saying anyway.
It's like when, I should say that.
And no one understands them anyway. Mordechai was sitting there, and they're talking, they're discussing this whole thing in front of Mordechai. So Mordechai knew about it.
When you're speaking an obscure language, didn't they know that Sanhedrin was convened?
They didn't know that Sanhedrin knew the 70 languages. They didn't.
Why say only Mordechai knew? The other ones knew also. They were all Sanhedrin.
Yeah, so Mordechai was there.
Yeah, but he was the one who had an inside man in the palace.
Ben Yadim Shayim Mordechai Makab Shivim Lashanya Shayim Yeshulishkas Adaz. So nobody's asking, it could have been anyone from Sanhedrin. And the truth is, it could have been anyone in Sanhedrin, but Ashkacha Pratis required it to be Mordechai. The one that overheard it could not have been just anyone in the Sanhedrin, because they wouldn't be the one that Haman was going after. And the one that told this over to Esther had to be the same one that Haman tried to kill. So there were 120 potential people could have been, and Hashemayim, Mordechai was the one that overheard them. He was next to them at the time. The Gemara, there's a couple of things I wanted to discuss on this pasuk. There's some very deep concepts in this pasuk as well, in every pasuk. First, I just want to point out the pashtus. Think for a moment, envision the scene. If you were talking to somebody and you're on a bus, this happens all the time. I mean, maybe it's not such a nice story, but I think it really happened. That there was a very heavy person on a bus, and there were two American people. I don't want to say any details. The two American people, that they saw this very heavy person, and they thought, you know, Americans think that only Americans know English and Israelis, you know. Anyone sitting next to you on a bus has to be an Israeli. And they don't know English, so they could talk about it. And they were talking about the heaviness of the person, which wasn't right. Very insensitive. And I think they made a comparison of between a person and a cow. They made a comparison between the person and the cow. They were speaking English to each other. This guy was sitting there. He was like on the row behind them or in front of them. They made a comparison. It was really not nice. In any language, it's not right. And the ride took however long it took. So right when that person's turn was to get off the bus, I mean, Baruch Hashem, I think he was a person with a sense of humor. So he rings his bell, gets up, and he passes by them, and he says, "Moo."
That's great.
Now, you have to understand, in order for this story to have happened, so the guy had to be sitting there as if he didn't understand the conversation. When one talks about another, and the guy, there's all kinds of signals that are given, your body language and his gestures and emotions and facial expressions, you could tell when somebody's, when somebody's listening in, they understand what you're talking about. Bigson and Teresh are talking about assassinating the king. If they continued their conversation when Mordechai was sitting there, number one, Mordechai knew everything they were saying. He understood perfectly. Number two, he was able to give the impression that he had no idea what they were talking about.
So they didn't walk into the Sanhedrin room while saying their plan, and the whole place becomes dead.
Mordechai was just sitting there, doing whatever he did. He's learning, he's davening, he's doing his thing, whatever Mordechai does all the time, he's davening, his terrorist trila. And they're talking about killing the king, and his mom, no reaction, no reaction, no involuntary jerk a change in his pallor, he's turning away, he just heard someone's going to kill out his wife, someone's going to kill Esther, they're talking about killing his wife. Could you sit still when somebody's talking about assassinating your wife right in front of you? Nothing. And to my estimation, this is due to him being from Sheva Binyamin. It's very interesting. Sheva Binyamin and Chazal make a correlation between a stone on the Choshen and Sheva Binyamin. Each Sheva has their stone. And the stone of Sheva Binyamin is the Jasper stone. Jasper. In Hebrew, it's called Yashfe. Yud Shin Fe He. Yashfe, because I'll make a drasha from that word. That the stone, the name of the stone, tells us something about the character of Sheva Binyamin. Yashfe means Yesh Peh. There is a mouth. Ve'ena Medaber. But it doesn't speak. Yesh Peh ve'ena Medaber. There is a mouth, it doesn't speak. Now that's, I guess you'd call that contraindicative, or contrary. Yesh peh ve'ena medaber, there's a mouth that doesn't speak. So Chazal said, what's it talking about? He had what to say, but he didn't say it. Binyamin knew that Yosef was sold. Binyamin knew what Yosef was. Binyamin knew everything about Yosef, and he never told anyone. You want to, I don't know. You want to write a brura? He called his sons Erd, Mupim, Chupim, V'Ardia, 10 kids. He named them all after Yosef. Erd as he went down, Mupim, Chupim, Chupim, I didn't see his chuppah. He didn't see my chuppah. He knew he went down to Mitzrayim. He knew Bella, he was absorbed, Bella was swallowed up. He knew he was swallowed up. He knew he got married. He knew, you know, he knew. Each one of his sons was like a segment in the saga of Yosef. He didn't say. He has a mouth, but he doesn't say. Shaul HaMelech. He was anointed as a king over all of Klal Yisrael, the first king they ever had. He went to the Navi to find his donkeys. The donkey, he goes to the Navi Shmuel. Shaul HaMelech goes to the Navi Shmuel. Where's my donkeys? I lost my donkeys. Shmuel says, here's your donkeys. I'll tell you where they are, and you're going to be the next Melech. He anoints him. He goes back home. His father says, what did the Navi say? He told us where the donkeys are. You know, he's got the powerful things. Nothing. It's as if it doesn't... Yesh Peh and Medaber. But Yesh Peh, he knew all the languages. The Mishnah said that Mordechai is called Mordechai Baal Hashem. It's called Baal Hashem. Baal Hashem means that he was a Baal Lashon. He was the master of Lashonis. When the women used to bring their karbanis, you know, if they had a baby, they'd bring a carbon. Or, you know, if they were tamei, they'd bring a carbon. Mordechai, who was not a Kohen, he was from Sheva ben Yamin, he was in charge of receiving it. Why? Because he was a communicator. Yeah, you have to know whether to chayiv and how to bring it. You need someone there that knows what, you know, has the power of a speech. Yesh peh v'ein medaber. And you see it in this pasuk. He knew when to say, he knew who to say it to. He's the master of speech. He didn't go to Achashverosh, he went to Esther. He knew when, he knew who to say it, and he knew how to do a good imitation of a rock when he had to. My great-grandfather's last name was Yashve. Yashve, yes. Yashve Avena Medaber. Probably. That's one point. Which is something which you feel should be pointed out. To be, you know, something which you might overlook. Yeah, you overheard it. They kept talking about it. Right in front of him. The second thing, Gemara Megillah. This is a Gemara Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph in Megillah. And the Gemara brings a Raya from here, Kala, Aymer Dover B'Shem Aymerai Mevi Geula Li'Elam. When you relate something over in the name of the one you heard it from, you bring Geula, you bring redemption to the world. Yes. We use this nowadays, you know, someone tells you a vort. So then when you say it over, you don't take credit for yourself, you say it over and you mention the name of the person you heard it from. The Gemara says, you see that Esther told Achashverosh about the plot, and she didn't take credit for it herself. She told Achashverosh, you know who told this to me? Mordechai did. They wrote it down in the book in the name of Mordechai. And they only knew that Mordechai's role in it because of Esther. And because of that, Klal Yisrael was redeemed. Now this is something which...
How else would she have heard?
Actually, this is... How she, you know, you're asking a good question, but I don't think the answer is Mordechai, you know.
Yeah.
How would they know who she heard it from?
She could just, like, she couldn't take credit for it herself. How would...
I don't know.
So she could have said, "How do you know Tarshim?" Like, I don't know.
What's the difference? You know?
No, she didn't have to say anything. She could have just said, "I heard."
What's the difference? I heard through the grapevine. I have my sources. I can't reveal my sources because I have to protect my sources. Can't.
She's always good at getting away with not telling information.
Oh, Yana has a good point.
What?
She whatever she didn't want to tell Achashverosh, she managed to get away with. And it always bothered me, you know, like, the fact that her telling Achashverosh, revealing the plot to Achashverosh and the name of Mordechai brought Geula, I mean, that's, you know, that is the way that Kadosh Baruch Hu brought it about. But the Gemara says, Kolai medavar b'shem Amar mevi Geula li'Elam. That anyone that says something in the name of its origin brings a Geula li'Elam. And that's something which... takes a bit of explaining. But if somebody tells me something and I say that over in his name, so then I'm going to save the whole Klal Yisrael.
Maybe it's the Midah. I'm not taking credit and being able to push off the all the credit.
Okay, but what does it have to do with Geula?
It makes the whole line. If people start mixing up, then we lose the line of Torah. Everything we have is passed down.
What?
We don't attribute things to the right people.
In Atzat, Atzat, this is not limited to Torah. Esther wasn't telling Achashverosh Torah. It's anything. If somebody gives you a chocolate chip cookie recipe. This is Kalayim Adavu B'Shem Aymer. The Gemara never says Davar Torah. So what's the connection between Aymer Adavu B'Shem Aymer and Geula? So just as a haskalah, I don't, you know. It's too big of a topic to tackle in 5 minutes. But just as a haskalah, the word Geula. The word Geula, the Jewish word Geula is Gimel Lamed. Kalus is also Gimel Lamed. Geula and Kalus are both Gimel Lamed. The word Geula has a meaning, and its very root has a meaning. It shares a common root with the word Gili. You ever heard of Gili Milsa? Gila means revelation. Geula does not mean redeemed. I mean, we use it to mean redeemed, but it doesn't mean redeemed. For example, there's a mitzvah if a Jewish person gets sold to a guy. If he sells himself, such a Jewish person sells himself to a guy. So there's a mitzvah on the relatives to redeem him, to regale him. So that's where we get the concept of what Geula means redeemed, but it doesn't really mean redeemed. And I'll show you why. Why do you have to redeem someone that sold himself? He wants to be sold, let him be sold. Why is there a mitzvah to force him to get out of it against his will? Why is there a mitzvah to redeem him? He did it to himself, let him suffer. And the terror to that question is because it's a stira, it's a contradiction. For a Jewish person to be a slave and a guy is a contradiction. It's a stir minei vei. A Jewish person is not an eved to a guy. A Jewish person cannot have a guy over him. A Jewish person is a free person. A Jewish person, his neshama is higher than a guy's neshama. A Jewish person is a melech. A guy could only be zeichet shleimus by being mizbatel to a Jewish person. The emperor of Rome, Antoninus, the emperor of Rome, used to have a tunnel under his house that led to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's house. And he used to learn Torah for Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi used to sit on a couch, an elevated couch, when he taught. And Antoninus used to bend over and and make himself available for Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi to use him as a footstool to get up onto the bed. Not at that time. According to Tysus, he eventually became Jewish. Antoninus Pius. When a Jew sells himself as an eved to a guy, so he's taking his identity, he's taking his very essence, and he's covering it up. He's burying it. There's a mitzvah to redeem him, aka beguile him, because when you buy him off the guy, so then he could become who he really is. You're not redeeming him, you're revealing him. You're not an Eved to a Goy, you're a Ben Yisrael. This is an ill-fitting coat. You can't do this. Geula means to reveal. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ultimately reveal us, in Achas HaYamim, B'Meher B'Yameinu, it's not just going to be some kind of physical redemption we're going to throw the yoke of the Goyim off of our necks. It's going to be a lot grander than that. It's going to be revealed in the world what a Ben Yisrael is. It's going to be revealed in the world what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is. It's going to be a Gili. Who is a Gili? Kala Imre Dava B'Shem Imrei. When someone mentioned it, you know, it's definitely a display of Midas Tavis. that the me is not the only thing in reality. You know, people, why would somebody take credit for something? Because everything that's good in this world, any Dvartara in this entire world, comes from me. And if you say it over in somebody else's name, so you're admitting that you're not Mr. Wonderful, Cute, and Beautiful. We do have a tendency to take credit for things. It's all me. This is my vort. This is my Kiddush. This is mine. It's all mine. I'm a Dov Hashem, I'm Rai. So there's a covering in anything you say. I'm a Dov Hashem, I'm Rai is not only the Avoda being involved in revealing, you're revealing something. Something that wasn't known before, but you're revealing the thing, you're also revealing the true source of things. That's Gula. That's Gula by definition. Gula is the revelation and the true source of all things. So, to what extent you bring Gula Yalam? A little bit, a lot, you know, depending on the importance of the Gilui. Esther's Gilui was a tremendous, it was a grand Gilui. So, brother, it had grandness attributed to it. So there was it had grand effects. You have a small gula. It's a small gula, but it relates to gula because gula is the revelation of sources, revelations of identity. Okay, everybody say.